Welcome to Neighborhood Church. To find out more about who we are and to support the work that we're doing, go to neighborhood.love. Have a good and beautiful day, friends.
Okay, we got everything figured out. I believe we do. Yes, it is on. Okay. Well, we are continuing our series. We're only 1 week in to our series called Mantra. And if we're going to talk about mantras, we have to talk about Pride Month. And if we're going to talk about Pride Month, we have to talk about Halloween, obviously, right? The most natural way of getting there. When I was young, I was raised Catholic at St. Francis Church. They had the scary, if anyone lives in Carlton or Renshaw and you drive by St. Francis, it has that big statue. It looks like a demon. Hello, yeah. So a little boy, Chris, wanted to climb that. There's a pole in the middle. There used to be a bell up there, and I'd get yelled at by the priest. Really good memories. So, but I do. Going there, I remember Cheryl singing on Eagle's Wings. I remember them having an organ that I'd pretend to play, and I hit every button on there. I didn't know what I was doing, but I imagine Cheryl did not like me a lot, right? But I remember there was only one kid's book or maybe two kid's books, and there was Donut Sunday, but the donuts were never good, and the Kool-Aid was watered down. But when you're a kid, you don't remember things, so every time I'd get excited. I'm like, it's donut. And then I'd eat. I'm like, oh, this is not any good, right? But one of the best things about Catholicism was that you could participate in Halloween, right? And I learned that in the reverse order because Halloween was great. As a kid, it's not just about candy. It's you get to dress up, but then your friends dress up. And people you don't even know dress up. You don't know what they're dressing up as, so you show up, and it's like this wild guessing game, like, who are you? Of course I knew that you were Rambo. That was me, right? And Rambo was just like, probably used my mom's, like, makeup and put, like, lines and, a green shirt around my head, and I got a yardstick. Do you guys remember yardsticks, right? And I'd carry that around, and it was so awesome until my mom ended up going to a evangelical church that I call, lovingly refer to as the crazy church, right? And it was a hyper-Pentecostal where, I say it all the time, they would literally run around the church and yell at the devil, right? And that was normal to me. But the transition from Catholicism to this evangelicalism was all of a sudden Halloween was bad. And it just wasn't bad, it was evil. And not only was it evil, it was dangerous. And so these safe adults, and I put that in parentheses, these safe adults told us, and we believe them, that Halloween is evil and dangerous because any participation with Satan is like actively dying. And it's going, like, Satan is going to use candy and jack-o'-lanterns and scarecrows and fun and joy as this lure into you to the pits of hell, right? And as adults, right, we hear that and we're like, oh, well, I'm happy for you, but that's not true. But then there's some adults who believe it, and then there's kids who trust adults because we're told to trust adults, and we're like, oh, my God, I think I got this all backwards. And I became afraid of Halloween. And what we did then was that we hid. We'd have candy, and we'd watch movies, and we'd spend time as a family. And it was really fun. It really was. But there was still this idea that whatever was happening out there was bad and evil. But there was a problem. In school, before Halloween, you do what? You do Halloween parties. You do, like, arts and crafts around scarecrows and pumpkins and candy corn, which is gross, right? You do all these things. And because I really loved God, and I was told by these safe adults to be afraid of it, that I would have to opt out of doing anything Halloween because it was not just against my religion, I was afraid, right? And that's an interesting thing for a kid in second grade, right, to be afraid of a holiday. But the problem was everyone else in my class loved Halloween and looked like they were having a really good time. And they weren't drinking blood or sacrificing animals, you know, as we were doing, like, you know, number crunchers, right? And there was kids, there was teachers, there was adults, teenagers, my parents' friends, grandparents, that all found beauty and love and inclusion and joy in something that was so evil. But those adults told me to be afraid of it. So naturally, we go to Pride Month. Because those leaders told me, don't trust your eyes, don't trust your body, don't trust your senses, don't trust your heart, don't trust what you're observing. Trust the church. So then when I got a little bit older, I learned about this thing called pride and something that they refer to. Now, let me just say this in general, right? That we are an open and affirming church and widely celebrate every expression of being human. That includes to all our queer friends, right? You are welcome here. So everything I'm saying is what was taught to me when I was younger, and not a reflection of who we are, who I am today. Does that make sense? Okay, so I want to be clear. Because what they told me was, Chris, there is this thing called the gay agenda. And I'm like, I don't even know what agenda means, but that's all right, okay? And there is this agenda that people are trying to lure people into this way of the world, which we all know the way of the world is the way of Satan, right? And it's a slippery slope, so you have to be aware, which meant you have to be afraid. And they would tell us all these really horrible lines, right? I mean, maybe you weren't raised in evangelicalism. Did anyone ever hear, it's not Adam and Eve, it's not Adam and Steve, it's Adam and Eve. Did anyone ever hear that in news? I still remember hearing that in like seventh grade, and I'm like, that's hilarious. That's really funny. What does that mean? Right? Like, okay, so it's not Adam and Steve. I know that's Adam and Eve. But it was a way to mock and make fun of queer people and a way of reinforcing their God chooses straight people over everything else, right? And so I was taught to be afraid, but there was a problem. I had a friend in high school, her name's Anna. Anna was a part of the local ballet studio, and she still is awesome. I hope that she's watching. And I would often talk to her, trying to get her saved, because I was a good little evangelical, right? I'm like, hey, Anna, it's time to come to Jesus. I got bad news, you can't celebrate Halloween. But the good news is you get to go to church three times a week, all right? and she finally asked me, I'll never forget it. We're sitting in the front of my parents' Toyota white Tercel that I blew the engine because I didn't know what oil was. Yeah. Yep, that's me. So does that give you why I don't order donuts on time? All right, there you go. And she looked at me and she said, Chris, what does God really have against my gay friends? Like, I hear you talking about God and it means a lot to you. But, like, why does God hate, like, my friend Adam? Can you help? I just don't understand. What is he doing that's so evil that he's bad? And what Anna did was took it from this nameless, faceless group of people that I've never known and never met, and I trusted these safe adults who told me to be afraid of Halloween, to be afraid of queer people, and that there's this evil thing happening. Don't trust my heart. Don't trust my senses. Don't trust my eyes. Don't trust my friends. And this is the first time that it became a real person. And I didn't know what to say. Because now it just wasn't those people. It was Adam. And Anna knew Adam. Anna loved Adam. And Anna cared about Adam. And Anna was a good person. And Anna felt differently than me. And all of a sudden it just became this like, oh, I guess I can't trust myself again. And I didn't have the language then, as I much later on as adult can realize, oh, I had to choose between Anna and this whole other way of thinking that I was told to be afraid of without knowing anything about it, right? So, told us not to trust our hearts, told us not to trust our bodies, told us not to trust what we're seeing, told us to be afraid of what's out there. And then you get into when I'm an adult and I am a pastor, a youth pastor at this church, and what was told to me over and over again is, Chris, it's just a slippery slope. As soon as you hit it, you're going somewhere else. Again, fear. Fear was put in place to keep me in check. Now, let's just pause for a second. A question I say often, I hope that you have memorized, is in any kind of way you're processing systems of power, of imbalance, fairness, or ethics or values. A question you can ask, and I learned from a very wise person, is if we believe this to be true, who benefits the most? Right? So if I was to really believe that Halloween was evil, and that it's even the gay agenda out there is this trap from Satan trying to lure me away from God and into the pits of hell, if we believe that to be true, who benefits the most? It's not vulnerable people. It's not marginalized people. It's the church. And actually, it's not just the church. It's the power in the church. Because when people say, don't trust yourself, when they tell you original sin, that your heart is decrepit and your heart is going to lure you away from these things, that is a way to keep power over not just a community of people, it's power over bodies. And if you've ever had any kind of power in your life, it is intoxicating. And if you tie that power to God, and you tie that power to God and God's ultimate judgment and eternity from all time, you're going to feel differently about that power, because it's not about what the safe adult said, it's about what God said. It's what the Bible says. And you get all three of those, and you're telling a teenager to be afraid, teenagers are going to believe them. But luckily for me, there's this person called Jesus, right, who has a little bit different way of thinking and operating, that maybe those safe adults in my life didn't fully understand. Now, I believe they did, and they manipulated power in the Bible to serve themselves. But Jesus in John 10 speaks about this, right? And this is where we get to the mantra. Is Jesus is talking to a group of people, and he uses this metaphor, he uses this story of how there is this great group of sheep, right? Which is a great metaphor, because we all handle sheep often, right? And there's all these sheep, and there's in this pasture, and there's these walls, and there's this gate. And Jesus is going around saying, you know, there's people who try hopping over the gate. There's people who try doing all these different things. But you know what? There were shepherds before me. They weren't so positive. But this shepherd, Jesus pointed himself, is good. And in John 10:10, actually, I think we even have it, Jesus says this. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. And I have come that they may have life and life to the full. This verse has been a mantra for me and our church since we started 11 years ago. And this is where we get the idea of good and beautiful life. Good and beautiful. When Jesus says, I have come to bring life and life to the full, our interpretation is Jesus is inviting us to participate in a good and beautiful life. Because I really do believe that we have a good and beautiful God who wants nothing but good and beautiful things for us. So here in John 10, Jesus is saying, there is these active forces. Now, if that is put on like a boogeyman, if that's put on something that the church has traditionally called Satan, if you put that on negative energy, you put that on that there is just pain and grief and loss in the world, because that's what it means to be human, all of it. I include that, right? I'm fine with all of that. Jesus is not saying, hey, Satan is out there trying to kill you through Halloween, right? He's not saying you have to be afraid of all these active forces. What does Jesus say? Jesus is saying, I have come to bring life and life to the full. There is this invitation of saying there's things that do harm and there's things that add value. Jesus is saying, if you move in the way of Christ, there might be this thing called the kingdom of God that is near. It's at hand. And it is an invitation for you to explore, for you to discover, for you to embody, for you to experience. Jesus tells us how to do this in Matthew 5 in the Sermon on the Mount. Goes at length talking about what does it mean to love. It's there's no greater love than one who lays down their life for their friends. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow has enough in itself, right? You can rest. He talks about that it's the humble. It is the meek. It is the last shall be first. Over and over and over again, Jesus is saying, you want to find belonging and purpose and love in this world? This is how you do it. But it's not a one-size-fits-all. Because what it looks to lay down my life, what it looks to check my privilege at the door is going to look different than it does for you, and what it does for a person of color, what it looks different for someone who's queer. But it's still inviting us into that life, into this pasture, in this way of being, of that we can pursue a life to the fullest. But that life is going to look different for all of us. We can all be inspired and moved by love. So what Jesus is doing here this mantra, this phrase, good and beautiful, has been a way for me to pause and reflect and engage. Is what I'm doing, is it adding value to my life? Am I really living a life to the full? Am I living a good and beautiful life? Does this thing, does this idea for me, does this theology actually help me to the flourishing for all humans? Or is this idea of God only helping a small group of people flourish? It is a mantra to help me reset and evaluate and to move forward. Because when those people told me to be afraid of those things, Jesus is saying, you can move with wonder, Chris. And maybe Halloween, for some people, might not be the best thing. For Halloween, for some people, it might be scary. It might feel like actively dying. It might be robbing them from joy. Okay, then don't do it, right? And we can support that, and we can encourage it, but then say it's bad and evil for all things. And this is what the church has done. It's taken something that someone at some point found fear or robbing them and said, now it's bad. Instead of saying, what if we make room for this beautiful table? Or we're going to trust London to make decisions for herself, and Mike to make decisions for himself, and Tony to make decisions for himself. And how you move through this world, you're going to have seasons where it's going to feel really easy. And then you're going to have teenagers, and it's going to feel like it's not easy, right? But then those teenagers are going to become adults. Like, there's stages of life, and there's seasons of life that are beautiful but are hard. So a good and beautiful life is not a life avoiding pain. A good and beautiful life, a life to the fullest, is not a life that's just sunshine and smiles and high fives. Like, I have experienced a richness in the past year that I've not experienced before. And my life got significantly more boring. It really did. I don't do nearly as much as I used to. I'm at home a lot. And at the end of the night, I sit on my couch, right? And really important work, holy work, right? And I wait for my teenagers to come out and talk to me. You know what they do? Sometimes they come out and talk to me. And it is the best part of my day to laugh with my daughter about, what is she watching? Love Island, season 6. She makes it very important. Right? It's season 6, Dad, right? It's very important that my son comes up from the basement at like right, he waits till I'm about to go to bed. Like, he can sense it. All right. And I go to bed fairly early. All right. And he comes up and he's like, Dad, what's with all the blood in the Bible? I'm like, great timing. I love that. All right. Let's talk about it. Right. Because I just want to connect with the people I love most in the world. And that's so much better than me going out and doing anything. But it took me 44 years to figure that out. That's a good and beautiful life. I tried finding purpose and beauty in other things, and for a season it did, and it could never hold up. But it led me to where I am today. And so that mantra, good and beautiful, is not a promise of no pain. The mantra of a life to the fullest is an invitation from Jesus saying, just keep moving. Like, the fullest life is a life on this journey and discovering new things and holding on to old things that maybe remind you of how good this life is, how good this love is. But I'm done tolerating life, right? I'm done just settling for, it's just good enough. Like, I want a rich, full life. So my invitation to you is to live a full life. Evaluate where you're at, what things you're carrying with you that may be some safe adults at some point. So even getting ready for this message, I went back and I was like processing these things and thinking these things. And it brought up some feelings. And it brought up anger and resentment of like, why did they tell me that? And I'm like, well, all I can do is take the best things that they handed me and leave the rest behind. That's all I can do. I can move forward. I have one of my mentors, her name's Rose Madrid Sweatman, and you're going to hear about her more in the future. She's writing a memoir. And she was a former Vineyard pastor as well, and she was in national leadership and has a whole story. And I got to connect with her just a couple days ago, and I was asking her all these questions because she went through, she went through a lot. As a child, she was a victim of abuse and violence. got married really young, lost a child. Their church had a very similar story to our church many years ago. And now has her PhD and is teaching at the Seattle School of Theology and some other really nice word, all right? And she's amazing. I said, she's about to turn 70. I'm like, Rose, how did you make it so long holding on to this faith? How did you keep, with all the pain in your life, how did you hold on to Jesus? And I just got to say this. The thing I love about Rose is that she uses language that I don't feel comfortable using when I'm talking about God, Spirit, or Jesus, right? It's still very, and there's nothing wrong with it. It still sounds very evangelical. And I've learned to really love it, right? When she says, like, you know, I feel like God was speaking to me, and I'm like, I love that. I'm happy for you, right? I'm not using that language, but I love that you found a place in this beautiful pasture that's similar to me, but still different. And your good and beautiful life looks different than mine. But when I asked her, how did you do it? She goes, I was raised Catholic. And in catechism, the first thing I remember learning as just a little girl is, what is God? Did anyone do catechism? Remember, what is God? What was that? Yes. Number one is God is love. Everything that comes out of that is it's rooted in love. And however you find God, now Catholicism is like infinitely expansive, right? And a lot of streams can feel very restrictive, and there's other ones that are just like the Pope, big fan. We're not talking about that. So, because I'm going to get a lot of emails from people watching, what about the Pope? I'm like, big fan. What am I talking about? God is love, right? And she said when she had heart failure and she almost died. And she goes, the thing I kept praying, the mantra I kept saying over and over and over is, God is love. And I have a deep surrender to that God being love. And it just like flipped a switch in me. It felt so real. It felt so authentic. It felt so simple, right? That's complicated that she almost died. She lost a kid. All this stuff, and what held her from a little girl to now being an adult is that God is love. So my invitation to you is however you find that good and beautiful life, it should look wildly different. And we're going to sync up in pockets and some language and some things, but we can be individuals who come together to remind each other that God is love. So I'm going to pray. I'd love to have you join me. So God, we welcome you and thank you for your spirit. Thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for your compassion, your kindness, and thank you for the invitation to a good and beautiful life. And as we were talking about different stages in our life of where we were handed something, a belief, a mantra, a phrase like, this is what men do. This is what it means to be a woman. This is what it means to be a human. And the things that we still carry with us that not only feel heavy, they feel toxic. I ask God that we can just leave those things behind. We can put them down in the pasture and understand there's things in our life that are robbing us from joy. They're seeking out to destroy us. And instead, God, we can pick up love. We can pick up curiosity, wonder, devotion, beauty. And we can move with that. So will you help us, God, to not only understand, but we can literally embody what love is, and that can inform us as we move in this beautiful thing that's called life. So God, will you also use us to inspire good and beautiful things all around us, from the garden outside to the dream of having vegetables where people can eat when they're hungry. What a beautiful thing. You can use us to inspire beauty and love at work, all the places we go. And we love you, God. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen. All right. Well, thank you, friends. I'm going to be up here for a while. If you have questions, you'd like to process, or you'd like to pray, or you'd like to challenge me. Oh, he's not up here. He came up to me. He's like, we're really going to race, right? I'm like, of course we're going to race. So if you want to watch me pull a hammy, we're going to do that in about 15 minutes. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.